what do I know from this experience when I'm painting a figure, when I'm painting a self-portrait? What does the body know? And what the body knows is things like violence, pain, joy, liberation.
Welcome to How to Play in Slow Time, interviews on creativity, where artists pull back the curtain on their creative practices and share how they listen, play, embody, imagine, model, and collaborate towards discovering something new. In this episode, visual artist Kathana Selvraj provides insight into her painting practice. She reflects on the unique ways in which she experiences colour and how that informs her approach to portrait painting.
My name is Kathana Selvraj. My pronouns are she, her. I am an artist, an emerging academic. I'm also an art therapist. When I first started responding with art, it was coming from a place of urgency. I was very young. I didn't really have language to express how I felt. That felt right to me. And art materials were always sort of encouraged when you're young to express, to experiment, to try things that are new. It was seen as a good thing. And for so long, I connected this idea of practicing art as a good thing. And then as I grew up, I realized there was such a rich healing potential with using art materials beyond its aesthetic qualities, beyond, you know, what it looks like. I think there was this real visceral element to when I was responding to art, but also the physicality of making art. I felt very deeply connected to the process of making. And then painting was something that I discovered quite recently, actually. So I'd say 2013, I applied for a scholarship. I only ever used dry mediums like charcoal and graphite. And this scholarship afforded me like a really great supply of oil paints. And I never knew like what to do with them. I'm not a trained artist, I'm self-taught, and everything I did was through observation. Even when I was drawing, when I was sculpting, I was making with my hands, it was all through observation. But there was something so special about a pigment suspended in oil that felt very much like part of my body in a strange way, blood-like. Without being too graphic, it just felt like it was flowing through me, and I never experienced anything like that. When I started painting, it was such a different application of the paint. The observation was still there, but it was so much more about the smell, it was about the movement, it was about the liberating aspect of like raising up your arm really high and throwing something onto a canvas and then creating a form. That kind of physicality felt new, and I really couldn't go back. And so, yeah, that was the beginning of the painting process for me. So it came from a really deep connection to a sense of personal liberation. And then it moved into a sense of political liberation because I started thinking about how forms usually were depicted through paint. And why reinvent the wheel? And I found it difficult in art school because, again, there was something so deep within me that told me this is what you're drawn to, this is what feels like you're most yourself, so how could that not have a place? And when I started making that connection between not having a place and what is usually esteemed and valued within contemporary art, I realized it was so much more than a bias on aesthetics or on what has been done, but it was realizing there were gaps in those who were relegated to the margins and those who were pushed to the forefront. And so I started painting a lot of more complex narratives, and so this idea of narrative complexity was really important to me, and also varied subjectivities. So certain bodies that I wasn't really used to seeing represented in more complex ways. I wanted to explore what that might look like and what that might feel like, creating imagery like this. And so that was really the beginning of my journey with figurative painting, but also working with ideas of subjectivity. I'm really in that space right now of connecting this idea of embodied knowledge systems. What do we know from the process of performance in terms of how we access knowledge, what knowledge is deemed valued, what knowledge is sort of relegated to just a spiritual practice. I start to think of embodiment as quite expansive. What do I know from this experience when I'm painting a figure, when I'm painting a self-portrait? What does the body know? And what the body knows is things like violence, pain, joy, liberation, subjugation, so many different varied experiences and sometimes intersecting experience and compounding those existing experiences in the body. So how can I look at that as a knowledge system, an alternative or subaltern knowledge system that still connects with the process of art making but also unveils or reveals something else about the body? And so while a lot of this process is about the art maker and making the work and the information that I can extract in the process of making the work, there's also something really interesting about connecting with the subjects and understanding their experiences in their bodies. And while I don't fully understand, having a sensitivity and an openness to receiving some of those stories in a way that I can then use paint to pay attention to observe as a locus for so many things. While there's a privilege for others to be able to distance themselves from those politics of the body, for many, it is an enduring set of conditions. What does that look like in representation and painting? And of course, that might seem like not the best medium or avenue to then have these really complex conversations. But the way I look at it is that we're returning to the body. Because contemporary art is, a lot of it had to do with abstraction, right? Abstracting and having these really abstracted intellectualizations about what the body is, or what it could look like, how was the body looked at before? And how can we reframe that, and how can we now use some of the modes of representation of the body in ways that interrogate, subvert, and resist against some of those ideas of what the body should be? So I use oil paint and I paint the body, and a lot of the times I started off with a more simplistic version of how I wanted to interpret a body, and so I focus a lot on portraiture. I realized there's so much more I wanted to show with how we hold our body, how we express the tension, how we try to present ourselves sometimes as more palatable in a way that is easy to understand. And for me, what I was interested in is then, you know, what are ways in which are quite subtle expressions evoked physically, and how we can notice that, especially when it comes to the bodies of marginalized communities or people who have experienced the world in ways that have not served them and their power and their sense of agency. And so my recent body of work has been looking at people who are quite prominent in the field of creativity or writing, and ways in which they have performed that role, but also the subtle ways in which they resist it. My experiences as a child, I remember thinking, art is so powerful because I can paint a hat with a cross, and now I'm a doctor, and now I'm a chef, and now I'm an animal, and now I'm a, and suddenly I am this thing because through my hands I made something. You know, it's so nice to think about returning back to my mind back then. It was just like this limitless potential of making led to so many different realities that could be fully realized. And I think I lost that along the way in some ways. Again, it's kind of these broader intellectualizations, which, you know, have their place, but coming to the heart of it, why did I want to make? Because I wanted to also liberate myself from my reality in some ways. you know, growing up in an environment that wasn't necessarily a soft place to land, art felt like it came in and opened the door and it told me there's a big garden out here. Let's play. I suppose a lot of the elements of knowledge production was stripped away because of colonization and imperialism, Western imperialism that happened in India. And then growing up in the global north, you know, it feels like there was a big disconnect with culture. And now returning to art making, but also seeing the lineage of creative knowledge systems in my own family, at least from my grandmother, allows a sense of returning back home in some ways. I used to think I had to solve problems as part of the process. And now I think more so of accepting them as a part of learning, that maybe I can close the chapter on that and start something else. So there were heaps of times where I started a painting and I'm like, this sucks. It's so stagnant. It doesn't feel alive. It's just so overworked. And I used to think, oh, I've just got to keep adding to it. I've just got to, oh, it's the lighting. Oh no, I've just got to switch up the color palette a little bit. Instead of just going, you know what? This was a moment where you felt something and it didn't really achieve the outcome you expected. Maybe it's okay to just throw it away. I'd say creativity is your birthright. You don't need a label like artist to enter into a world of creativity. Using art materials in ways that make sense to you, in ways that create a sense of safety, but also a sense of imagination and playfulness. Not worrying so much about if it's going to be accepted within broader culture, within the field of contemporary art. What happens when you just let yourself go, it's okay to be mediocre at times, it's okay to still be learning, it's okay to make mistakes?
This episode is part of a series of interviews with extraordinary people talking about their creative practice. You can find the rest of the series wherever you get your podcasts. You can also purchase our book titled How to Play in Slow Time, which unpacks the theory, practice, and teaching approaches to creativity from Brill Publishers at brill.com. How to Play in Slow Time was created and produced by Charlotte Farrell, Alexandra Talamo, Brioni Trezais, and Maria White. Edited and scored with original music by Tom Hogan. Special thanks goes to the Technical Resource Centre and the Creative Practice Lab at UNSW Sydney, where our podcast was produced. UNSW Sydney exists on the lands and waters that have been cared for since time immemorial by the Bidjigal people of the Eora Nation, whose sovereignty was never ceded. I'm Charlotte Farrell, and we hope you'll join us on the next episode of How to Play in Slow Time, interviews on creativity.